Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum on Blog Talk Radio this January 30th, 2019. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and life coach at the Couple Center in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I broadcast live each month on Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tonight's 30-minute episode, How to Interrupt Frustrating Impasses and Standoffs with Your Spouse, is about a problem most people, most married people, have likely experienced at some point, if not frequently, with their partners. I'll hopefully shed some light on what this issue looks like and give you some tools to slow things down and get away from the standoffs to something more conciliatory and clear. Now, two housekeeping notes that you should know about. I am broadcasting from the southern coast of Maine, and we are expecting a squall, a very, very fierce winter squall any moment, and you never know around here. So if I bomb out on you, it's because we've lost power. There was an outage, and we've lost the internet. So if the show gets interrupted, I will have to rebroadcast it at a later time. Hopefully that won't happen. The second housekeeping note is that if you've called into the studio at 877-497-9046, know that you can join me live on the air with a question or comment simply by dialing 1 on your phone. You'll then be in line to come on the air. Obviously, if you're streaming the show at the time of this airing, you cannot come on live unless you also dial in. So what I will do is pause at a few intervals for calls. And please don't be shy. I like for people to call in and ask questions or make comments and make it a conversation. Okay, so first, a brief anecdote about this issue. My husband and I get into the car to leave for a lovely drive along the coast on a blustery winter day. I enter the car after he does, and I'm hit by a blast of dry, boiling hot, oven-like air. It is probably the 50th time I have to ask him to turn down the heat. Why did he set it so high yet again? I cannot breathe. He angrily tells me he was just trying to make the car comfortably warm for our drive. What's the problem, Susan? Now, in an elevated voice, I remind him that I begged with him not to start the heat up so high. It's very unpleasant. I know he's trying to get the car warm, but if I wanted to live in the Sahara Desert, I would have moved there long ago. Why can't he just honor my request to start the heat at a more moderate setting, so we don't go through this rigmarole every time? He then snaps back that I'm a twit. I have so many rules and have already ruined our ride. Why don't we just go back home? We then make a fake turn back into our driveway, stop briefly, and shortly afterward, we drive back out for a redo. This is a very good example of a standoff between spouses. My husband feels unappreciated, nagged, and managed, and I feel unheard, stonewalled, and caught up in his black and white thinking. Now, in our case, luckily, we happen to love each other and have been together long enough to recognize a sequence like this afterward, generally in sufficient time for a correction and a reboot. In this case, the issue is about something seemingly insignificant, but it could just as well have been about something really big, like whether to go on a particular special vacation, how to handle a dilemma with a mutual friend, or whether and when to retire. So the standoff could be about big things or little things. Now, if standoffs like this sound familiar to you, and they probably are, then there are a few things you can do to manage them. I'll talk about in a moment. But first, there's one thing about standoffs that you should know. And it's a conceptual thing and it's a visual thing that I think may help. You may have heard the expression, and now would be considered racist and politically incorrect, but you may have heard the expression, a Mexican standoff. Why it was ever called a Mexican standoff, I have no idea. I don't think Mexicans ever had a corner on standoffs, but somebody long ago labeled it that way. A good visual for the standoff would be something most of us who are not millennials and have been around a while would remember from the old, what they called cowboy and Indian days, another not so politically correct word. So the cowboys and the Native Americans, but they called them Indians at the time. So we would watch these TV shows and you would see this throng of cowboys on horseback, and it was the militia, but they were called the cowboy and Indian movies. It was the militia facing a throng of Native Americans, Indians. The cowboys or the militia had their guns primed to blow the heads off the Indians. Okay, so there they were in a standoff with the Indians primed with their bows and arrows. And everything would be frozen for sometimes quite a while. And we, watching the TV, you'd be sitting there waiting with bated breath to see what would happen. And what you learned if you watch these shows is that if either side lowered their weapons prematurely all by themselves, they'd get creamed. Nobody wanted to be too vulnerable too quickly all by themselves. So what would end the standoff in a more peaceable way without people getting killed would be what I call a gradual lowering of the guns. So in effect, the militia or the cowboys would say, okay, we'll lower our guns if you lower your bows and arrows. And the Indians would feel the same way. All right, we'll lower ours if you lower yours. So it would be a gradual lowering of defensiveness until neither side felt that they would get creamed. And that, I'd like you to keep that visual in your mind, because that's a good visual for what conceptually is needed, what is conceptually and operationally needed in order to get past a standoff. If you maintain defensiveness and you expect the other side to make a total concession by themselves, you're not going to get anywhere. People don't like to do that. Okay, now back to management tools. And this has more to do with operationally what you can do to interrupt a standoff when you find yourself in one. And hopefully to avoid the next one so that you're not repeating the same old standoff again and again and again. Take a breather. You'll need to get some perspective on the situation. And don't just leave the room. That gets experienced as a unilateral, very rude move. And what I would recommend instead is make some kind of an announcement. Say something like, you know what? I need to take a deep breath. We're obviously not getting anywhere. I need to take a deep breath. I need a little time. So announce that and try to say that you will be back. I'll be back. I know we need to talk about this, but I'm not good to go right now. So take a little breather, and then it's important for you when you take your breather to use some calming down tools, like deep breathing. If you practice 4-7-8 diaphragmatic breathing, that is something that can significantly lower the stress response. So basically, it's you breathe in for 4 seconds through your nose, you hold the breath for 7 seconds, and then you breathe out for 8 seconds through your mouth. You do this, ideally you do this for a few minutes, and it lowers the stress response. So you, whatever heatedness you feel will start to get calmed down. Another thing you can do when you're taking your time out is count backwards by threes from 100. I don't really understand neurologically why this works, but it seems to. And I think it has something to do with re-channeling a reactive mind. It takes a little concentration to think about counting backwards by 100, you know, from 100 by threes. So it probably just changes the channel in your brain a little bit. You could go for a meditative walk to calm all systems down. And a meditative walk might be where for maybe a few minutes you focus on what you hear. Do you hear birds? Do you hear traffic? Do you hear wind? Then for a few minutes you focus on what you see or what you feel. So you use your senses to pull you into the moment away from a reactive stance that you've been in with your spouse, okay? And it can be very, very helpful. Or you could just focus, by the way, on your gait, the how long your steps are, the rhythm of your gait, et cetera. But the important thing is don't reengage with your spouse until you're feeling calm enough to have a two-way discussion, not just to defend your position. So if you go back in guns blazing, so to speak, and you're just trying to prove your point, you are going to reopen the standoff. And that's very hard because it's human nature to try to defend your position. So that's ideally what would happen first when you notice it. The second thing, when you notice yourself in one of these standoffs, is to try to identify why the standoff feels so rotten. And this is something you would do either afterward or during your taking a little break. What is the issue for you that's getting triggered? Do you feel unappreciated or unheard or pushed around? Is it something familiar to your history that loads it for you? This will be important to share with your spouse because, especially when you're locking in around something seemingly moronic like how to heat up the car, what's the issue, and how might it be familiar to your history? If you educate your spouse about your hot buttons, it's part of being a close couple, so he or she can learn to be more sensitive around them, and also know that you're working on what I call minefield management. I like to think of all of us as hauling around a little personal minefield. They're hot buttons, and they're kind of zones of vulnerability, and it could be around anything like feeling taken advantage of or not feeling heard or feeling ignored. It could be anything, something that your past has kind of programmed into your brain, has really made you feel over time. And that's important for you to educate your spouse about. You know, I think that standoff really encompasses this, and this for me. This is a real sensitive issue. That's why I do my part in the standoff. Now, believe it or not, we're about halfway through this little show. It's a 30-minute show. I'm wondering if there are a few people on the line, if there are any questions or comments at this point. If you have one, just dial 1 on your phone and I can bring you on the air. And there is no such thing as a stupid question unless you call in and you say, where can I get the nearest ice cream? How would I know that? But anything relative to this subject, there's no such thing as a stupid question. Here's your big chance. No? Okay. I'm going to stop again near the end if you have questions. All right. Now, so you take a timeout, and in the timeout, you try to identify why the standoff feels so rotten. What's the issue? The third thing is to think about ways that you've handled this situation in the past that either helped or hurt any possible solution. So try to notice patterns and log them for later discussion. I always encourage couples to do that. Notice what works. Notice what feels like an improvement, because if you don't do that, then it's going to feel like it was just an accident. you want to ask yourself, where was I? Was that better? And where was I in that sequence, if that sequence was better? What did I do differently? It's human nature to say, well, you did this, this, and this. You finally did this, this, and this. But that will come to you more naturally. But really try to pay attention to the sequence and yourself in the pattern, if it was better. Tell your spouse not only what they've done that's more helpful, but also what you've been trying to do. So I think, you know, that really fosters goodwill. If you let a spouse know, you know, I know this is a hot button issue for me. I'm trying to be more clear about it. I'm trying not to nail you with it at the last minute. You know, obviously my waiting to nail my husband once inside a boiling hot car hasn't registered for him as a reasonable, simple request. So try to let your spouse know what you're doing in the way of changing your end of the standoff. Your spouse will appreciate that. And the fourth thing is think about whether you're really fighting about something else that feels more dangerous to deal with. This is an important thing because couples generally have what I call zones of unmentionables they collude to avoid. These are issues that feel so big or so dangerous, or there's such feelings of hopelessness, or, oh, it's just too much, we're not going to get anywhere with this, that I call them unmentionables. And the deeper the well of unmentionables, the more likely it is that these things are going to get displaced onto little things, little smaller, less loaded subjects. So couples often kind of transfer the feelings about the larger issues onto other less loaded subjects. One example of that would be if your wife's drinking feels unhealthy and unsafe to you, and are you, and it's very hard for you to talk about because your sense is that she's not about to stop or lower it, and you don't know how to say anything about it. It feels like an unmentionable. Are you nitpicking her about something else which feels careless as well, like how low she lets the gas drop in the car? So try to pay attention to displacement. Where are you bringing up smaller things and avoiding the larger things? Because then you're really in a spin. You're not really solving anything. And what I say to couples is try to introduce the deeper issue when you revisit the standoff later, hopefully with more sensitivity and finesse. This is a very hard thing. You may need professional help to deal with this one, especially if your experience has been that you've been stonewalled. You've tried to talk about it in years past or situations past. So you may need professional help to deal with this, but you can begin by trying to introduce it when you're both in a more, in a calmer, more modulated place, and to let your spouse know what the larger issue for you is. You really want to sensitize your spouse to that. Okay, now the fifth thing is when you process what happened in the standoff afterward. And this may seem like self-evident, but it's not to a lot of people. Take turns sharing these things and listen to each other's concerns. You cannot both talk at once. And I work with couples all the time, and everybody's talking at once. Nobody's listening. You can't be listening if you're talking. So take turns and focus more on trying to understand rather than trying to be understood. I think that's an old Buddhist precept. But try to understand. And also focus on what a helpful correction would look like. So remember, there's a veiled request inside every complaint, and it's your job to disclose it. If you approach your spouse when it's your turn to talk and you're just bombarding them with complaints, you're not going to have a receptive spouse. They're going to turn off and they're going to shut down. They may be looking at you and going through the motions, but they're going to overload. You do not want to create system overload. You're less likely to do that if you talk about what would be helpful. You ask what would be helpful. What would be helpful to you? What do you need in this situation? So we're not always repeating this sequence. And you think about your complaint. You need to voice the complaint, but don't stay in complaint mode. You think about, what am I asking for? What's the request that's inside this complaint? And that will lead you toward problem solving. It will also help you be understood and you understand your spouse better. In our case, with my husband and myself, we waited a day until the most recent impasse. We each said our piece, and we realized that there was a bigger story that drove the standoff. My husband needs me to relax on some of my perfectionism. He was clear about that there's so many rules I impose on him that it feels oppressive. He can't even remember them. And I conveyed to him that I just need him to focus less on his innocent motivations and more on his listening and methods of doing things. One of the biggest issues I have with him is, I know your motivations are innocent a lot, but intentions, you know, there's a saying, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Your intentions, if you don't change your behavior when the intentions, the behavior isn't working, your intentions don't mean much to me. First of all, I'm not inside your head, but I need you to translate those intentions into behaviors that register as more helpful to me. So we were really able to get to that. In this case, I'm embarrassed to say I cannot even tell you how many times we went through this particular standoff about the stupid heat in the car. It must have been, I don't know, maybe 8 times, maybe 10. And we were lazy. We didn't bother to do the taking time, reflecting what's it really about, and, you know, do the work afterwards. So what we were doing is repeating the same moronic sequence about the same ridiculous thing until finally one day we looked at, what is this about? Why is this such a trigger for each of us? And so my husband understood that, well, yes, he can turn the heat on in the car, but it doesn't have to start at maximum heat, full blast. I don't like getting into a car that's boiling hot, where I feel like I can't breathe for the first few minutes. And I realize, you know, maybe I translate my perfectionism. I lay it on him in ways that could feel oppressive. I do have very particular ways of doing things, and I'm sure it can get a little old at times. So to be aware of, what's the context I'm creating so that this could feel like just another damn rule? So, problem solved in our case. And hopefully, in your case, if you follow these simple steps, it's not rocket science. It takes some goodwill, and it takes some thoughtfulness, and it takes some diligence. Now, I have just a few minutes left before I have to stop. There's a few more people on the line. Don't be shy. If you have a question, feel free to ask it. Or if you have a comment or there's something you just want to share with me, go for it. Okay. I haven't yet figured out how to help people feel more comfortable coming on the air. They may think that millions of people are listening to them. Maybe sometimes there are, but there really is no such thing as a silly question. In any event, I don't have any questions here, so I'm going to wrap up. I want to thank my listeners. I hope you found this brief podcast useful and you feel better equipped to redirect some of the standoffs in your own marriage so that you feel like you're not just doomed to repeat this stuff. My next episode will be on Wednesday, February 27th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I haven't yet decided on a subject and a possible guest. It's likely I will have a guest because I'm sort of due for that at this point. But I will be announcing that through my blog, my Facebook page, and through Twitter, okay? So good night, everybody, and thank you for joining me. Bye-bye.